Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Today is Thursday, February 22nd. The time is 1:33, and with us today we have Senator Gardner. Welcome.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens, welcome.
Thank you.
And Senator Machicki, welcome.
Welcome.
Before we get started today, and we do have two items. Oh, I wanted to also thank the recording secretary and LIO operator, Carrie and Kelsey. Thank you so much for being here and making it possible to record it and make this accessible to the public. So before we get started, I want to also welcome Senator Meyer, the vice chair of the committee. Last meeting, we had a special treat. We had the guest speaker who was here in Juneau for the Juneau Economic Development Council's Innovation Summit. We always have the guest speaker here in the committee. We had Franz Johansson, and he has authored The Medici Effect. And all the members now have a signed copy of the book. So we now have a book club, and we will be having our first meeting. No, I'm kidding. I really encourage you to. One of the things that I've done is I've tried to start a library, really, of reading materials on economic development. And Mr. Johansson was really interesting, and the committee's Facebook page has a interview with him if you missed it, and also information about him. And just thought that was a really interesting presentation that the committee heard last week. So today we have two bills on the agenda. We have Senate Bill 165, introduced by Senator Anna McKinnon. Welcome. This is the Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund Extension Bill, and she's here with her staff, Brittany Hartman. I want to welcome you to the committee and invite you to go through your bill. And then, Brittany, if you could go through a sectional, and then we'll open it up for questions from the committee members.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the LBNA, Labor and Commerce Committee, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 165. In 2015, the individual health care market in Alaska was very precarious. We had two insurers, and one of them was talking about leaving the market. The 29th legislature, Madam Chair, in a bill carried by you, HB 374, created the Alaska Reinsurance Program and allowed the Division of Insurance to apply for a federal Section 1332 State Innovative Grant Waiver under the Affordable Health Care Act. The legislation had a set date of June 30th, 2018. That date is approaching us now, and this bill proposes to continue the reinsurance program. Madam Chair, I'm open for questions, and we can walk through a sectional analysis. The bill, if those at home don't understand what was happening, we had, as I said before, someone, an insurer, an insurance company leaving the market, the individual market. And we had a pool of folks that were high-cost providers that were driving insurance costs up for all members in Alaska in the individual market. And by creating this reinsurance program for these particular groups of people, we were able to lower the price overall for the people entering the individual market in the state of Alaska. And to that end, in finance earlier today, in the Senate, we saw in the supplemental budget a return of $25 million from Premera based on the work that happened under your leadership, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you. And if Brittany, if you could walk through a sectional before we open it up for questions.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hartman, staff to Senator McKinnon. Section 1 of the bill removes the requirements of the Department of Administration to separately account for revenue from the insurance premium taxes collected and removes the requirement of depositing net proceeds into the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund. Instead, they will be deposited into the general fund. The Achieve Fund no longer needs deposits of new money from the premium tax credits, thus the reason for this section, but the fund must continue to exist in order for the program to continue. Section 2 extends the sunset of the Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund from June 30, 2018 to June 30, 2024. Section 3 repeals the definition of net proceeds due to the deletion of language in Section 1. Section 4 is retroactivity clause, allowing for if this bill takes effect after July 1, 2018, then Sections 1 and 2 will be retroactive to July 1, 2018 and June 30, 2018, respectively. Sections 5 through 7 are effective dates. And would you like me to go through those specifically, Madam Chair?
Certainly. Thank you.
Yeah. Section 5 makes Section 4 effective immediately. Section 6 makes Section 2 take effect June 30th, 2018. And Section 7 makes Sections 1 and 3 of this Act effective July 1st, 2018.
Thank you, Brittany. So Section 4, which adds the retroactivity clause, which would become effective immediately, is that because those funds that we received in the current program are going to be used, not going to be placed into the, they're going to be placed into the general fund instead of the Comprehensive Health Insurance Fund? Is that the reason for the retroactivity there?
Through the chair, I am not exactly certain on that section. Can I ask for backup from the department?
Yeah, why don't we hold off on that question? I think Senator Gardner has a question. Oh, she doesn't. Any member of the committee have a question? Okay. Yeah, if Anna Latham from the Division of Insurance could come forward. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Anna Latham, Deputy Director for the Division of Insurance. And to answer your question in Section 4, the reason for that retroactivity clause is to adhere to the terms and conditions of the approval for our federal waiver.
Okay.
I had a few points, if I may, Madam Chair.
Please, thank you.
So Alaska, the Division of Insurance, applied for a 1332 waiver, as it was mentioned. The life of the waiver is for 5 years. It's from 2018 through 2022. The reason that we're asking for a six-year extension is because the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services have indicated that they may extend 1332 waivers for an additional year. So okay, that's the reason for that six-year request. That's my first point. The second is that for 2 years since House Bill 374 was enacted back in 2016, premium taxes have been deposited into this specific fund that we're requesting to be extended. This bill really reverts back to the old system. Prior to that, all premium taxes collected by the Division of Insurance were deposited into the general fund. So going forward, if Senate Bill 165 passes, new premiums will be collected and deposited back into the general fund.
Okay.
That was my second point. And the third is just that the division did receive a federal waiver. The federal government is paying for approximately 90% of the reinsurance program. The terms and conditions of the waiver include that the division must enact legislation to authorize the reinsurance program beyond the state fiscal year.
Okay.
The state must also appropriate sufficient funds on an annual or other appropriation basis for the ARP to operate as described in the state waiver application. The state must convey copies of its authorization and appropriation legislation, as well as any other legislation that may affect operation of the ARP, to the departments. That's the Department of Treasury and Health and Human Services within 2 days of passage. So our federal award and our reinsurance program is contingent upon this fund extension.
Okay, thank you.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Something I've just always wondered, what does surplus lines mean?
Let's see, where am I? So, Senator Gardner, through the chair, surplus lines are types of insurance. They're willing to take on more risks than admitted companies, and the brokers pay the premium taxes directly. So there's two types, foreign surplus lines and which are domiciled in the U.S. and file annual statements with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, and the others are alien surplus lines. They only file statements with the NAIC, who's responsible for the regulation. And that would be an example of that would be Lloyd's of London.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it sounds like you feel pretty confident that the money will continue for at least the next 5 years and maybe six?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, yes. My confidence is based on the approval of the waiver and the terms and conditions of the waiver. We did receive verification of our final award. We are required to submit quarterly and annual reports to the federal government for this award. They did come back to us very recently and approve a $58 million award to fund the program for 2018. So, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Michiki.
Thank you, but this extension is through December 31 of 22. Is that correct, from the Department of Health and Social and Human Services?
That's correct.
So just to remind members, this is the same program that Director Lori Winghire came to the committee and gave us an update on the innovation waiver that the state applied for. So we do have, familiarity with this. We also passed that bill in 2016. So very successful. Senator Michiki?
So I the only reason I asked that question is we actually, this bill allows the sunset provision to go from June 30th of 18 through June 30th of 24, but our authorization is 2 years shy. So we would have to, the Department of Health and Social Services would have to reapply for the additional 2 years. Is that correct?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, we've struggled with the actual dates because program years, the insurance premiums are determined and the payment for the premiums are through a calendar year. Then we have a federal fiscal year, which ends in October for the federal appropriation, and then we have a state fiscal year for the state match and the appropriation. So we are just requesting, as the bill states, to extend the fund through 2022. Or 2024, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a complex issue, and I'm having a little trouble following it. I'm sure the public is, too. Could you talk about the $25 million received from Primera and how those funds come back? What is that process, and what is that for? And can we expect that in the future?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that $25 million award was because Primera made more profits than what they anticipated to make. To handle that, the division directed Primera through an MOU to award the reinsurance program with that $25 million. That was one time. It was not anticipated when we approved the rate filings in the individual market. And we don't anticipate awards like that going forward. The best way for us to address that was to apply it to the reinsurance program so that premiums would be lowered for all individuals in the individual market.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That helps. We don't expect it, but we would like it. thank you.
Are there any other questions of committee members? Okay, seeing none, I'll take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. I'd like to open public testimony on Senate Bill 165. I am not seeing anyone signed up online to testify, but I will ask, is there anybody online who would like to testify on Senate Bill 165? Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on Senate Bill 165? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed, and I'll look to the will of the committee. Just a reminder, we've passed this initial legislation in 2016 and had a summary from the division director earlier this year, and this is an extension bill. So, Senator Meyer.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 165, Version D, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 165? Okay, seeing none, so moved, and we'll take a brief at ease as we sign the documents. Okay, welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Next, we have Senate Bill 161. This was introduced by Senator Wilson, who is here with his staff, Jasmine Martin. Welcome. And it's a temporary dentistry temporary permit bill. And so welcome, Senator, and please feel free to introduce the bill to the committee and let us know of any changes that you were hoping to have, because I'm aware there might be some.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Casella and committee members. For the record, my name is David Wilson, Senator for District D, and with me today is my staff, Jasmine Martin. SB 161 is a Health and Social Services Committee bill. It's been worked on in the my office and the office of the Vice Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, and it's an act relating to the licensure of dentists. This would allow the Board of Dental Examiners to grant a temporary license when a dentist is suddenly incapacitated and needs immediate replacement. Alaska has such small number of dentists, and when one is suddenly ill and unavailable to work, this leaves an immediate gap in the care that Alaskans receive. This issue was brought to our attention by the dental community, and many healthcare professionals already have a some type of mechanic situation for them to issue temporary licenses like the Board of Nursing, and this would allow one for the dental profession. At this time, my staff, Jasmine Martin, will walk through the bill and go through a little bit more in depth of why this is needed.
Thank you, Senator Wilson, and welcome, Jasmine.
Chair Costello and members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, for the record, my name is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator David Wilson. Senate Bill 161, an act relating to the licensure of dentists, would allow the Board of Dental Examiners to grant a temporary license to dentists who are suddenly incapacitated. A temporary dental license is needed either when a dental specialist or a rural general dentist is suddenly incapacitated and cannot find a replacement for an extended period of time. Referring to the document labeled Dentists in Alaska, you can see the dental specialties lined out. As you can see, there is such a low number of dental specialists, even one incapacitation can leave a large gap in our care. Anchorage is the only town where all these dental specialties are represented. Fairbanks, Juneau, and the Mat-Su area have several specialties represented, but not all. The remaining communities are served by a single traveling dental specialist. In 2015, an endodontist who served multiple communities, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Kenai, and Wrangell, had a stroke. There was a gap in care until a dentist licensed in Alaska could be found. Historically, small communities have had a hard time recruiting healthcare practitioners. This bill provides a quicker solution by providing for a temporary permit until a permanent replacement can be found. I'm now going to run through a quick sectional analysis. It only has two sections. Section 1 amends Section 0836-100, which is a section addressing examination and licensing for dentistry. To reference our new section added in Section 2 of this bill as a valid way for a dentist to obtain a license. Section 2 adds a new section under examination and licensing for dentistry titled A Temporary Permit to Substitute for an Incapacitated Dentist. This section details the requirement and process for obtaining this newly created temporary dental permit. And then I'll quickly talk about the fiscal note. The department will use $2,600 to cover legal costs to amend regulations, printing, and postage for the first year. The total revenue collected from the licensing fee will approximately equal the actual costs. There's also in your packet a letter of support from the Alaska Dental Society and the Alaska State Board of Dental Examiners.
Thank you very much, Jasmine. I'm actually going to take a real brief at ease here. Okay, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order, and we are on Senate Bill 161, and the sponsor and his aide have reviewed the bill and gone through an explanation of the sections, and now we have
received the breakdown of dental specialists in Alaska, and I do believe that we have some questions. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. I guess I'd like to know the qualifications of the people who are getting a temporary license and where, I mean, have they passed the everything that's required for them to be licensed dentists or?
Senator Gardner, through the chair, for the record, this is Senator Wilson. We have two a little bit more qualified dental experts that are online available to testify that may be better suited to answer that question upon the specialty and the training that these temporary license holders would have to go through. Dr. Nielsen and Dr. Robinson could probably be better suited to answer that question and more qualified as they are in that profession.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. You want to wait till they're up, or
I do, because I think we have a few other questions for the sponsor, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll address this to the sponsor, but you may want to toss this to the people online too. My question is, if you want to become a temporary, do you get the temporary permit first if you're a dentist, and then do you become part of a pool that people can draw upon or call upon?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, this bill would, there's a limit to the number of days that you can be licensed. Mm-hmm. I believe it's 2-6. I can. So on the second page of the bill on line F, that this is a temporary permit issued for initially for valid for 90 days, consecutive calendar days, and then issued under for additional 60 calendar days. And no more can you have this for consecutive 240 calendar days. So the idea was that you don't just have sort of a, if you will, like a locums tenens coming back and forth to the state, that this is only for a temporary emergent situation where one a dentist may be incapacitated for some type of health care or some other emergent type of need.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair, if I can just follow up on that a little bit. So if I'm in Bethel and my specialist has heart attack or something, and so I guess you call in to somewhere and then you would request a dentist. I guess my question is there like a pool to choose from, or how does that work?
There would not necessarily be a pool. I'm sure the dental community would try to go around and try to find expertise to address that situation and issue. But at this time, this is sort of a new.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I have two questions. One is that on page 1, section C, line 15, it says a temporary permit issued under this section is valid only to treat patients of the incapacitated dentist at an address listed on the business license of the incapacitated dentist. But previous testimony suggested that there are dentists who treat patients, say, in a cluster of villages. So, but the temporary permit would only let them treat patients at the address on the license.
You know, I think someone online, for the record, Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson, someone online might be better equipped to answer that question. I'm not sure as to the specifics of their addresses.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, I have a second question.
Senator Gardner.
Talking about extending a permit from the original 90 days, on page 2, section G, starting at line 17, it says that the permit can only be extended if the board determines that it's necessary and has received a clearance report from the National Practitioner Data Bank, a clearance report from the Drug Enforcement Administration, and a completed application form and fee. But if those two reports, the top two reports, I'm concerned about, not the fee, are necessary for an extension, why wouldn't they be advisable for the original permit?
Through the chair, this is Senator Wilson for the record. It's similar to other agencies. This was modeled, like I said, again, for the Board of Nursing. The idea is that for an extended period of time, you're getting to that more permanent type of status. Mm-hmm. And so you do want to start to have a little bit more due diligence and a little bit more a first when you're going through the background checks. So an extension would be a situation similar to a stroke where someone may not have come back to work in a more timely period outside of the 240 calendar days. And once you start getting to the temporary, you don't want to have sort of a loophole for folks not to go through those clearances as a regular practicing dentist.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure why someone would go through a temporary license if they could get a permanent license. What's the difference? Is it so much more onerous to get a permanent license that is it time involved, and can we try to address why that time is so long?
So this is, again, this is meant to quick, through the chair, this is Jasmine Martin for the record. Let's see here. So it's not necessarily the time is so long and onerous, but this is a very quick reaction to a sudden illness. So in the instance of a stroke, they didn't have any time at all. I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Well, I'm just wondering through the chair why you'd make someone go through the hoops of getting a temporary license if they could get a permanent license.
It through the chair, it could also be someone who's not necessarily planning on practicing dentistry in Alaska permanently. Also, an instance could be someone who recently retired and does not necessarily plan to return to dentistry, but will temporarily to fill this gap. Again, it's temporary, so they're not necessarily permanently planning on practicing at that location or in the state.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm asking, what is the process of getting a permanent license? Is that really onerous long term?
I think that's through the chair. I think that's probably a better question for the board.
Yes. Madam Chair.
Senator Machicki.
So if I actually, just on that same point, if I understand it correctly, they have to pass the what could happen is a dentist is incapacitated for 30 days because you have to be out for 30 days in order to use one of these temporary dentists. Is that correct? And then, so in that hypothetical, it could have been a licensed dentist in the past that simply didn't retain their proof of continued competence. So it would have been someone licensed under 08-36-110 that is just no longer continuing what's required under 234, right? So it would be a qualified dentist that is just not continuing their competence. Did I understand that correctly?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, so they're licensed in the past but not retaining their ongoing competence requirements. But actually my question goes on to the amount of days. So if you couldn't practice for the first 30 days, but then your temporary permit is good for 90 days and it could be extended for another 60, the 60-day extensions with a 90-day doesn't add up to the 240-day max. Is there a reason the 240-day max doesn't line up with three extensions and the initial? Seems like they would.
Maybe the sponsor could get back to us with that answer since we're not moving the bill today.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also had a couple questions. I think what we're trying to get at here is, where is this pool of people coming from? I mean, are there people out there who are trained to be dentists but are at home doing other things or something? And so I think that's the heart of what we're trying to get at. So I look at the bill and I'm thinking, well, could these be people from out of state that are licensed in other states that are brought in? Is that another scenario?
Through the chair, yes. It's Senator Wilson for the record. This is a bill that is trying to address the temporary need or problem. We have dentists that often move to Alaska, relocate to other states, would like to come back and help some of their counterparts, help some of those folks in the field who may suffer a temporary illness, that knows the community, folks that have retired, as Senator Maticki has mentioned, folks that no longer hold their current licensure, similarly to what sort of like law enforcement, who folks that may want to be relicensed or nursing, again, that people who retired just don't want to practice on a full time, but sort of wants to help out, similar to teachers that want to go back and maybe help out and substitute teach every once in a while to fill a void or a gap. This is what that this is bill is for. It's for those temporary folks that may be out of state, may be interested or get a call that they're retired or they have availability or to come to Alaska to help out in these type of situations, or folks that are already currently in state that may have let their license lapse during that time period because they don't want to practice dentistry on a full-time basis anymore, but don't mind just sort of giving that helping a hand to help out those communities in need.
Thank you. And then could you talk about the safety aspect and the public safety aspect? I have written down here on my notes background checks. I'm assuming that on page 2, lines 20 and 21, that in, to be cleared by these agencies, you would have a background check.
Yes, and this is, to the chair, this is a bill that to get a temporary license has to go through the Board of Dentistry. They will pick these qualified candidates, go through their background, and do the vetting for these additional applicants. This isn't something that someone just sort of applies through on paper without having the proper vetting to go through. So, I mean, the extensive background checks, going through the FBI fingerprinting, things of that nature, takes a little bit more time and issue to do. That's why we have the sort of limits on the number of days that they can go through without having those additional background checks and clearance. But there is some due diligence that is done through the Board of Dental to make sure that these folks are qualified dentists to perform their practice of dentistry.
Thank you. Another question I have before we go to the dentists online, who I'm sure are chomping at the bit, no pun intended, to answer our questions. I can only imagine. So what about liability? I mean, let's say a dentist with this temporary license performs a procedure on a patient and then there's complications. Is there anything in the bill that relates to the client's right to sue, or, you know, how is that covered, the liability issue? And if that's something that maybe Janie could answer, or those online, I can wait. Okay. My final question for you before we go to Senator Stevens is, have other states implemented this type of license, and have they had success with it?
We have not looked through to other states in terms of dentistry. Like I said, this is something that we saw in other medical practices here in the state of Alaska that we're modeling this off of, and not really for other states. We can do some little bit more due diligence in that and get back with the committee.
Great. If you can, I think that would be fine. I think now is a good time to go to our folks online who are available. Senator Stevens, you had a question first?
Yeah, just one question. To make sure I understand this. So as I understand it at this point, Madam Chair, it only relates to someone who has been licensed in the past. So does that exclude then a recent graduate of a dental school who's not had a license anywhere?
No.
No, I have to be licensed under 110.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, no, it would not exclude them. They would still have to go through the Board of Dentistry to be issued a temporary license, as long as they have the qualifications and certifications. I believe that would still allow them to fill this these holes.
Thank you, Senator. So earlier we'd heard that it was only someone who was licensed in the past, but that's not quite the case then.
Well, it would be a licensed dentistry to allow to be practiced, so unmet need. We will clarify.
Okay, that's another question. We'll make sure we get answered. My question has to do with how often the board meets, because if you have an emergency situation, where you want to fill this position? Does the board meet often enough, or would they? Is there a provision in there for the board to meet in order to approve these? And then my other question is there a requirement that the temporary license be displayed? Is it the same type of requirement that any license has for doing business in the state, or is there any responsibility for the person who holds a temporary license to inform the patient or the client that they have a temporary license? I didn't see it in the bill, so maybe that's just something to think about.
It's correct. It's not currently listed in the bill. If that's the will of the committee, we can add that if that's something as a amendable item or something that maybe the board of dentistry would like to address.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think next we will go to, well, I'll open public testimony first. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay. And then online, I have two individuals. I have David Nielsen calling in from Anchorage with the Alaska State Board of Dental Examiners. Yeah. Welcome, David, and please feel free to provide comments and also answer any of the questions that were asked. And I've tried to write many of them down, but we'll make sure that those questions of members get answered in some form. So please feel free to give your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, David Nielsen. I'm a current member of the Alaska State Board of Dental Examiners. And I jotted down some of the questions, but you might have to refresh my memory. But not long ago, the Dental Board noticed a kind of deficiency in our governing statute. And it seemed to be lacking a permit option that was available to a lot of the other professional licensing boards in Alaska. So the Dental Board approached the Dental Society to help with the issue that arises on rare occasions, and you're asking about the frequency, but it's pretty rare. When a dentist becomes incapacitated who services a patient or population base that cannot be absorbed by existing licensees, that is licensed dentists that are already in the state practicing. And so the creation of a streamlined emergency temporary permit would allow the board to address this issue. The reason being, Alaska dental licenses given by credentials, which I think one of you asked about that, it can take easily 4 to 6 months to collect all the information necessary. We use a clearinghouse, and I know there's one case right now that has been going on for almost 9 months. And so in the meantime, this incapacitated dentist business and their patient base can be put in jeopardy. The bill that's currently in front of you mentions, I think it's on line 12, about the requirements of 36.234, which has to do with the credentialing process. And you might have been bringing this up already. I don't know, but there is a substitute, or the committee is working on perhaps a substitute that would allow the board, and the board is completely willing to do this, by the way, develop regulations that would apply to this new permit. So I know there are some questions out there that you had. I know one of them had to do with the liability coverage, and I'm sure that these dentists would be coming in large part from out of state, because if they had a current Alaska license, then that wouldn't even be an issue. So the requirement, I'm pretty sure, is going to be that they have a license in good standing in some other United State, a state in the United States or territory, and to have a license in good standing, they'll probably be in good standing with the National Practitioner Data Bank as well. I know you had some other questions, but I can't really remember all of them. So,
David, one of the questions was from Senator Gardner. It has to do with the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2, where it says that a temporary permit issued under this section is valid only to treat patients of the incapacitated dentist at an address listed on the business license of the incapacitated dentist. And her question had to do with in the rural communities, would this prevent or make it more challenging for the temporary license holder to treat people in a region?
We might have to check on this to tell you the truth, but usually when a license has, or when a dentist, say a specialist, is working in multiple different areas around the state, they will have their locations of their practice. And so I think that is generally what that was meant to mean, was that say if it's a specialist, in the instance that Senator Wilson's staff, I think, mentioned was amended on us, and if he has satellite offices, then that the new endodontist that would be coming under this temporary permit would only be allowed to practice in those satellite offices where that endodontist was working.
And then there was another question about the sheet of paper, which I'm not sure you have in front of you. It talks about the types of dentists in Alaska and the breakdown of dental specialists. Do you have that document?
I do not. But I know there is a high concentration of dental specialists in the in the bigger cities. And so that is one of the reasons that, for example, that endodontist in question was traveling to some other of the smaller communities. So as far as the exact number, the distribution, I do not have that in front of me.
Okay. Are there any other questions, Senator Gardner?
Thank you. So I just want to make sure I understand, first of all, that the people getting the temporary licenses or permits would all be licensed practitioners of dentistry. Is that correct?
Yes. There's really no other way, because if you're a student and you have not gotten a license in any state, I don't imagine, and like I said, we'll be developing regulations for this. I don't imagine that would allow you to have a permit under this category until you have been licensed by some state somewhere in the United States.
Thank you. And Madam Chair,
Senator Gardner?
So there, I heard you say just there that they had been licensed, but their licenses would have to all be active. It couldn't be somebody who retired for 10 years and came out of retirement and their license isn't active. Is that correct?
Well, I should not speak to that, because we will be developing the regulations for this, and I think a committee substitute will be coming down the line, I imagine. And so I can't say for sure yes or no on that. Because a lot of times what will happen is this dentist, whoever becomes incapacitated, will have somebody in mind, most likely, that they know could help them out or help out their situation. And so that is the person or persons that the dental board would have to vet. And I think it says also in here that it has to be a position that's not reasonably filled by current licensees. And so that's another thing that the board will have to determine.
Okay, thank you. And Madam Chair, if I might continue. So when we contemplate a different version, whether it's a sponsor substitute or a committee version of the bill, I'd be looking for active license language about that, not somebody, because if they have been in retirement and allowed their license to lapse, it would mean also that they haven't continued with the continuing education, possibly, that's required to maintain licenses. I'd be concerned about the liability insurance question and make sure they have that. And then lastly, I'd be interested to know, how do our state license requirements for dentists compared to other states, and specifically, are there some states where the requirements are much more lax than here, or is there sort of a national standard, and we can assume that anybody who's licensed elsewhere is competent under our policies?
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a gap, Mr. Nielsen, we can wait to talk about it. I think there's a little confusion. I mean, it requires, the only thing the bill does is waives the continued competence required under 234, mm-hmm. which requires an active license under the laws of a state or territory of the United States. So it doesn't have to be in state. But it still has to meet the requirements of 110, which is the qualifications for license. So you can have a license but not be practicing, which this bill allows you to waive the continued competence. I think we need to think about, and I know there's probably a CS coming up, and I can wait for that, but it sounds like there's some areas that are a little bit foggy at the moment.
Thank you. Are there any further?
I'd be looking forward to looking. We do have a CS on the House side, and I assume we'll get one here. And I basically just wanted to make it clear that the dental board is behind a permit category of this type.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam. Just a quick question, Dr. Nielsen. So. So we understand what the license procedure is. Say you were to retire today, how long would your license still be in effect? Does it disappear immediately, or do you have a couple of years? How long is the license valid?
The license will be valid as long as you pay your annual renewal fees and you keep up with your continuing competency. So really your license will become invalid once you stop paying the fees and stop taking your continuing education. And we do random audits on the continuing education. So
thank you, Dr. Nielsen. So I suspect if you were retiring as a dentist and you knew you might want to go back temporarily to fill them or someone, you'd keep paying those fees, and like we see teachers do, they keep recertifying to. So anyway, there should be people out there that are just continuing their licenses even though they're not working.
Most people will keep their license active or at least available if they feel like they can still help out. You know, if they still feel like they're willing and able to help anywhere, whether it's working at a mission or mercy somewhere in another state or doing a temporary permit like this, as long as somebody feels like they still have something to contribute, they will keep their license and be standing. Most of the time when they let a license lapse, it's because they're done.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Nielsen. This is Senator Costello. I have one question before we move on to Dr. Robinson. On page 2 of the bill, lines 5 and 6, it says essentially that if another dentist licensed under this chapter may reasonably substitute for the incapacitated dentist, the board may not issue a temporary permit. So there's going to be a burden associated with that to reach out and find out if somebody can substitute. And so I just wanted to get on the record, who's responsible for that? Would it be the Board of Dental Examiners? And then what does may reasonably substitute mean? I'm wondering, does that mean, they can fill in enough time or perhaps fly to that community from another community? How are you going to find out whether other dentists are available and then also communicate that to the general population of dentists?
Well, of course, the word may, you're more versed at what may means than I am, perhaps, but what that E probably really means is if a general dentist in Anchorage becomes incapacitated for some reason, it's probably not reasonable to expect another licensee could help out with that, and we do many times. So it will be, it says the board may issue a temporary permit. So I guess what that means is, it may not if it doesn't seem like It could be handled in any other way. That's what I read into that. I guess we could think about this in a lot of ways, but really what it comes down to is an option that's very, very rarely used. It's been gone. It has not been in the statutes for, well, it never has been. And so, so it is a rare occurrence, and it's not meant to be abused. And so I imagine that is why E is there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next, Julie Robinson from the Alaska Dental Society, if you'd like to provide testimony and then answer any questions that you've heard us talking about or provide any comments.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman Costello. My name is Dr. Julie Robinson from Anchorage, and I am speaking on behalf of the Alaska Dental Society. Not long ago, the Dental Society became aware of rare situations when an Alaskan dentist becomes incapacitated for health or other reasons, leaving a specific patient base uncovered for geographic reasons or because the dentist happens to be a specialist and no existing licensed specialist is willing or able to cover and treat the patient. The Alaska Dental Society fully supports Senate Bill 161, which would give the dental board an expedited process to grant an emergency temporary permit in such cases.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. Do members want to ask her any questions? Or Senator Stevens, followed by Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Robinson. So if we were to pass this, would this allow the board to decide that, say, an oral surgeon could be replaced by someone in orthodontics? Is it only within the same specialist field, or could it be folks outside that specialist field who could be approved?
My understanding is that they would not approve anybody outside the specialist field. So if you had an oral surgeon, that oral surgeon position would not be filled by a general dentist. It would have to be a specialist. And that's primarily the concern that we have here is with the specialists, because most of the specialists are concentrated in the larger cities, and so these specialists that travel from rural areas, if they were incapacitated, the specialists in the bigger cities may not be able to leave their practices and cover those areas, where a specialist from out of state may be able to do that for a limited period until the dentist can get back and continue with their practice and cover those areas.
Thank you.
Okay, I see. Oh, Senator Michicki.
So, Mrs. Robinson?
Yeah,
Robinson. Ms. Robinson, it's been a little confusing. If a dentist is adequately licensed in the state of Alaska, this bill does not affect them. They can step in and practice for other dentists. And the gap...
Oh, absolutely. And that has happened numerous times. I filled in for a dentist who's crashed his airplane and had a bike wreck and other, mishaps on a short-term basis. But that's in Anchorage, and I'm a general dentist. If an oral surgeon, an endodontist, an orthodontist that travel to these rural communities need some help, I would be unable to do that for them because I am not a specialist.
Right. So what this bill does is it allows the board to waive the proof of continued competency requirements. It is for likely currently unlicensed dentists that have previously been licensed, and they can become temporarily permitted to practice through the waiver of continued competence requirements. Is that correct?
Well, Dr. Nielsen, correct me if I'm misspeaking, but my understanding is that you have to have an active license in another state, so Washington, Oregon, whatever state in the United States. To have that active license, you have to have your continued competency. So you would just be waiving the fact that they did not have an active Alaskan license so that they could come up and cover for that for the dentist that they needed to. So no, you're not waiving competency, you're just waiving the Alaska license requirements.
Thank you, Dr. Robinson. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 161? Is there anyone else in the room? I've already asked, but is there anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? Okay, seeing none, public testimony is now closed on Senate Bill 161, and we will hold this bill until a future date, and hopefully the sponsor and the members can have questions answered. If you have any questions that you would like answered, please feel free to email those to Natasha McClanahan, my committee aide, and then we will make sure that the members get those answers. Okay. Thank you, and the committee is adjourned.